Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on 101 Business Principles when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, so great and small, but you shall have in your house, or you shall not have in your house, I should say, diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and just weight. A perfect and just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. They tell us, quote, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold or gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach in our business school conducted twice a year here at the law school. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? It doesn't cost anything. It's the place to start. Maybe this is for you. Maybe it isn't. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now and find out whether it's for you or not. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Hey, we're talking about business principles. I mentioned to you last time that in my long and so far successful business career, and I've run across a lot of men, a lot of businessmen. I've run across more business boys than businessmen. And I grade people by what I see in their business acumen. They've either got it or they don't. Business isn't something you're born with. It's something that you learn. You either pick up on it or you don't. It kind of reminds me, when I was a kid, you know, you wanted to go to work in the woods, so they'd hire you on, and you had to be able to learn the job that they'd set you to do, the task, in 6 days. In other words, they'd give you 1 week. And if at the end of the week you couldn't do the job as well as a professional or as well as some guy that'd been on the job for 20 years, this probably wasn't the business for you. It's probably not the occupation that you should get involved in. You can either do it or you can't. You can pick up on it or you couldn't. Well, the business is kind of that way. It takes a little longer to pick up on these business principles because there's so many of them. In fact, I've got 101. That doesn't mean that there aren't 202. Just that over the years, I wrote them down, you know. And I'd see a businessman, and he would do something, or he would conduct business in a certain way. And I'd note that down, or I'd ask him. I'd say, "Now, Mr. Rocha, Mr. Harvey, you know, Mr. LaFranchi, why are you doing that? Why do you do business that way instead of the way they do it, you know, uptown or some of them?" And then he'd tell me. He'd tell me, "Well, now, when you do this, here's the results you're going to get from it." Now, every action that you take has an equal opposite reaction. You ever remember when you were in school, you know, they said, you know, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. Life is like that. When you screw somebody over, they just can't wait to screw you over. You do something good to them, and they want to do something good back. You know, if people like you, they want to do something for you. If they don't like you, they can't wait to do it to you. So our actions in life have reactions. They cause people to react to us based upon the way we treat or the way we act toward other people. So, you know, if you smile at somebody, he's likely to smile back at you. If you scowl at him, then he's liable to scowl back at you. You know, do you want people scowling at you or smiling to you? No. It's kind of what you do, you know, comes back to haunt you. Now, last time, you know, we talked about 11 of these principles over here. The beginning of all business is the offer. All business is transacted by unequals. If the offer is good, take it as is. Never just refuse an offer. Always make a counteroffer if you don't like the original offer. And all business is transacted with an acceptance. Never accept a deal you can't perform your end of. The best business is repeat business. You never lost any money on any deal you didn't make. Never charge interest. Never pay interest. And then do unto your customer that which you'd have your customer do unto you. Now, that was the first 11. Now, the next item over here is number 12. When you're the seller, always deliver more than you agreed to. When you're the seller, you know, you want to sell somebody your stuff and you're expecting to get paid for this. You want to deliver more goods, more services, more of whatever it was you agreed to than you agreed to. And then number 13, when you're the buyer, you always want to pay more than you agreed to pay. Now, I know somebody's going to say, "Well, wait a minute. If the price of this item is $17.40, why would I want to give him $17.50? Now, here's the way to handle it. I one time bought a car, or once upon a time I bought a car at Alameda Chevrolet. That's the Chevrolet dealer right across the Park Street Bridge in Alameda, California. It's on Park Street. Hell, this is 30 years ago or more, 30, pushing 40 now. It was a 64 Chevy Nova. And I walked in on the lot and I saw this blue Chevy Nova and liked what I saw. And then I drove it off the lot and, you know, with the salesman, and we drove it around the block a couple of times. And I brought it back and I said, "Yeah, I think that car will do." Now, there's, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 little things on there, you know, like the window handle was missing and the door didn't open too good, and, you know, they had a bad battery or needed me to deal with this and that and something. But anyway, there's 5 or 6 things needed to be done. And I said, "I'll tell you what, I'll pay you the $600 that you want for the car. I'm not going to jew you down to $500 or $400 or something else. You want $600, I'll pay you the $600. But those 5 or 6 things, I want them fixed." And the salesman said, "You're right on there, son. We'll fix those for you." And I said, "Okay, well, I'll be in on Friday," and, you know, we made a date. And so Friday after work, and I stopped at the Alameda Chevrolet, and sure enough, they'd fixed all 6 things, and we signed up and fixed up the papers, and I handed him the $600, and I got my bill of sale, and I drove off. Now, here was the thing that I noticed about Alameda Chevrolet. Now, this is pushing 40 years ago. This is probably about 1970. Could have been 68 or 69, something like that. But anyway, You know, when you get in the car, what's the first thing you look at? The gas gauge. You know, you start it and you look at the gas gauge. You look at the oil pressure. You look at the temperature gauge. You look at the battery gauge. Is it charging? And so, you know, I saw all that. And I noticed that it had a quarter of a tank of gas. You're going to ask me, how do you know? Had a quarter of a tank. I remember this story for 40 years. Had a quarter of a tank. So I drove it out and drove it back. And when I came in to pick up the car the next Friday, I drove the car out and I noticed that the tank was full. Now, we did not agree. I did not insist. I did not tell this guy, you have to fill the gas tank. If I would have, he probably would have said, okay, we'll fill the gas tank. I didn't. And I didn't ask for that. I didn't expect it. No. But I did expect that the windows would work, and I did expect the cigarette lighter to work, and I expected the radio to work, and, you know, I tested everything in there, and they fixed what I saw as being deficient. But when I drove out of there, they had filled the gas tank. They didn't have to. And in those days, gas was 30, 35 cents a gallon. Probably cost them $5 an hour. But here's the moral to the story. They delivered more than they agreed to. And I never forgot it. And I'm recommending Alameda Chevrolet 37 years later. And I would imagine that the salesmen and the people that owned that company back in 1970, hell, they're probably all dead and buried by now. Probably. But, you know, when you have a good business experience and you like what you received, I got everything that I agreed to and more. And I didn't forget that. Now, if that gas tank had been full when I drove off of there, and then when I drove out and it had been a quarter full and they'd have siphoned out 5 or 10 gallons of gas, I would have remembered that also. And I would not be recommending them. And I would be telling you what a bunch of scuzz buckets they are and how cheap they are. But that's not my story. Now, when you're the buyer, always pay more than you agreed to. Here's the way you do that. You don't stall people off. You know, a date for a due payment is a date for a due payment. Pay the guy early. If the rent's due on the 1st, pay him on the 25th, 5 days early. I oftentimes do this with business people that I do business with here. I walk into the Gainesville building materials store, and some customer sends me a money order for $500 or something, you know. And I've got this money order. Now, I don't have a checking account, and cashing money orders, you know, you got to go to the post office, and you walk into our little post office and tell them you want $500, and they look at you like, huh? Hell, they don't have $500. They wouldn't know what $500 looked like in Isabella, Missouri. So, you know, they might have to work a week to get $500 to come through the Isabella post office. So I take that money order in and I just give it to Denny and I say, put this on my account. I keep a plus account. You know, most people, they have a debit account. You know, you owe the building materials store something. Have you ever thought about paying that bill in advance? I got to tell you a little story over here. You know, I've got credit in every store that I want to do business at. And I have yet to fill out a credit application. I have yet to fill out a financial statement or tell anybody where I bank or how much money I've got or whether I use Preparation H. You know that? And I think I could go into Gainesville Building Material and run up a $5,000 bill. I've done it many a time. And old Denny came to me one day and he says, Mr. Gordon, I hate to bring this to your attention, but your bill is $5,000 and you haven't paid it for 6 months. And I said, well, why didn't you say something? He says, well, we send you a bill every month. And I said, well, hell, I just ignored those bills. So I came in and I paid him the $5,000 that I owed him. And I apologized, and I said, well, I'm terribly sorry that I didn't pay you for 6 months. And so when I paid him an extra $1,000. I said, here, put this on my account. I used your money for 6 months. You use my money now for a while. And he just tickled to death. Now, let me tell you how to do this. You want to open an account somewhere, and you don't have any credit. Yeah, I don't have a social security number. I don't have any banking connections. I don't have any credit. I don't have any credit cards. And I've got credit accounts all over. I can walk into Kinko's and charge what I want. I can go into Terry's or Gainesville Building or Meeks or anybody else. Here's what you do. You walk in there and you buy $100 worth of stuff with a $500 money order and you say, put it on my account. And that opens you an account, doesn't it? You don't need any financial statements. You don't need any credit history. You don't need jack squat to overpay on the account. Now you've opened the account. Now keep a plus balance in your account at the store. I mean, you know, you keep a plus balance in your checking account at the bank. Instead of doing business with the bank, why don't you give the money to your business associates, the people that are actually providing something for you? You ever thought about that? Instead of keeping money in the bank, you keep money at the hardware store, the building materials store, the paper supplier, and so on down the line. They'll open an account for you. All right, now you've got an account. Now when the account goes into deficit, okay, so now you owe them $100 or you owe them $200. And you just run it back and forth. It's the way you open an account. You know, business people do business with people that they like. People that do business they like. Like I said, there's business boys and there's businessmen. So when you're the buyer, pay more than you agree to. And you pay more than you agree to when you pay up front. One hand washes the other. Now, every transaction must benefit all of the parties every time. Every time you make a transaction, it has to benefit you. But it also has to benefit the guy that you're making the transaction with. Always make sure that when you're making a business transaction, that the guy that you're doing business with is benefiting from the transaction. And if you do that, he will not forget that. I got to remember one time, I went into Bill Knight, and then I had some gold coins in my pocket. And I put 4 gold coins on the counter, and I said, I'll cash one of these in. And I think I had a Krugerrand, a Maple Leaf, and I had a St. Gaudens. And I think I had a $50 Eagle. I put them out there. And so he looked at the 4 of them. He picked up the St. Gaudens. He flipped it over and he said, now this St. Gaudens has a $50 premium on it, more than these other 3 coins. He pushed that one back and he picked the U.S. Eagle. And now he could have taken the St. Gaudens from me. He kept his mouth shut, never said a word about the $50 premium. Pocketed the extra $50 and I'd have never known the difference. But you know, he didn't do that. And I haven't forgot that to this day. And I still recommend Bill Knight. Now he's retired. He quit business, you know, but Bill Knight was an honest man. He was an honest businessman. He never wanted for anything. He never wanted for customers. And when I went into Bill, I always knew that I could always trust him. Why? Well, because it was over a $50 transaction. Now, I went over to another guy, and I did the same thing, and he took the St. Gaudens, and he never said a word to me. Well, when I got home, I missed my St. Gaudens, and I said, well, that guy slicked me. And I've never forgotten that guy either. I mean, that's just, you know, that's just the way life is. So, you know, if you slick somebody, he's not going to forget it, and he probably won't come back and do business with you. Now, the guy that slicked me doesn't do as much business with me, or he didn't, until Bill Knight quit. And that guy does not do as much business with me as he could do with me if he hadn't slicked me for that $50. That $50 has cost him $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, at least, in lost business. So if you want to stiff somebody for $50, get after it. But you always want to remember that the guy that you stiff for the $50 isn't going to forget it. He isn't going to miss it, number one. He'll come to the realization that you slicked him. And then when he comes to that realization, he will take his business someplace else, at least most of the time. The only time he'll do business with you is when there's nobody else that he can get it from. And when he does business, he'll be watching you with both eyes and both hands and both feet. So if that's the way you want to do business, that's what I call a business boy. not a businessman. So every transaction has to benefit all of the parties every time, and never risk more than you can afford to lose. You know, when you're in a business transaction, you don't want to risk more than you can afford to lose. There are some deals that are too big for you to handle. I remember a guy sent me $35,000 one time in $100 bills in a plain brown envelope. That was 350 $100 bills, $35,000, in a plain brown envelope. I called this old man up and I said, "You fool, you blind, you nitwit." And then he said, "Well, Mr. Gordon, I trust you." And I said, "Old man, you have never laid eyes on me. You don't know me from Adam. And for you to risk all of your life savings..." I said, "Now that's all of your life savings, isn't it?" He said, "Yes." "And you risk your whole life savings on this transaction through the mail." Hell, he didn't even send it by registered or insured mail. "And you can rest assured that the only reason it got there..." Because, see, money has a smell to it. I mean, just, you know, take a pile of dollar bills. You know, most of you can take a pile of $25 or $50 bills and smell them. There's a smell to money. And when that envelope... Peggy came in my office and she said, "Here's an envelope." And she said, I hope it doesn't have what I think it's in it." And I smelled it and I said, "Hell, it's got money in it." "I don't know how much, but it's got money." I opened the envelope, counted it out. You can bet that the only reason it got through the postal service is because every postal employee that picked it up said, "Well, this is a setup. This is a sting. They got the cameras on me." And so he was careful to pass it on to the next guy. And it got through. So if you want to mail a package with $35,000 and just send it ordinary mail, it'll go through every time. Because the postal workers, they know what's in those packages too. I mean, they handle them every day. So, moral to that story is that you never want to risk more than you can afford to lose. And I said to the old man, I said, "Now what you do is you send $5,000 seven times. You know, and if I'm a thief, I'll steal $5,000. And I said, "You're lucky because my price is more than $35,000. I can handle $35,000. But I said, "For God's sake, don't send me $350,000 or $3,500,000 because I don't know if I could handle that much money without stealing it from you." You know, every man's got his price. There's a temptation level out there to which most men can't handle. And you don't want to tempt me like that. 35 I can handle. I did that once before. I know I can handle $35,000 without stealing it from you, but don't send me $350,000 because I'm liable to take off for Brazil with your money. So never risk more than you can afford to lose. And then number 16, never position yourself in a transaction so that you can be taken advantage of. You know, business is business and BS is BS. And so the next one over here is number 17. Never trust anyone. Business is not predicated upon trust. Business is predicated upon performance. Performance, not trust. I don't know how many times I've had people tell me, "Well, I trusted old Ben over there and he screwed me." "Well, I was trusting old Sally. I was trusting him and I shouldn't have trusted him." And, you know, Jesus. You know, come on, kids. Let's wake up. You know, everybody that's ever screwed you was a Christian. Well, I guess it's not too surprising. 95% of Americans are Christians. Now, I told you in the last program, I said I did business with the Chinese, and I only had one Chinaman stiff me for $150. And I was talking to another Chinese guy one time, and he was questioning me. He says, "How many Chinese customers have you got, and how many jobs do you do?" And one thing and another, I was chit-chatting with him a little bit, and I said, "You know, funny thing, I've been doing business with the Chinese now for about 3 years, and I've only had one Chinaman that didn't pay me." And he was kind of shocked, and he said, "Who was it?" And I said, "Well, it was one Hung Lo." And he says, "Oh, yeah." He says, "We don't do business with him either." The Chinese don't steal. Chinese don't cheat. Now, there's some other people out here, you know. We got a little rule here that if you're a Mormon, you pay cash in advance. Cash in advance. Mormons are Christians. And Mormons, they have a philosophy. You can screw anybody you want except another Mormon. Jews do the same thing. Screw anybody you want except another Jew. And so for that reason, you know, it doesn't take a real smart guy to figure out that when you're doing business with Mormons as a general rule, now there are some exceptions. You know, I've done business with Mormons that are pretty honest people. But I'm going to tell you that as a class or a group of people, that if I find out you're a Mormon, you got to pay cash in advance or I won't do business with you. I mean, I've been stiffed so many times by Mormons that I don't want to do business with them as a class of people. Chinese, got to love them. They're hard to do business with. God awful hard to do business. But when a Chinaman tells you he's going to pay you on Friday, he'll pay you on Thursday. If a Chinaman says he's going to pay you this amount, you can take it to the bank. And all the people that ever screwed me in my lifetime have been Christians. So I've got a business principle, and I'm going to tell you what it is. It's never trust anyone. Business is not predicated upon trust. It's predicated upon performance. So don't position yourself in a position, in a transaction that you can be taken advantage of. And if you don't allow yourself to be taken advantage of, you won't be. It's just that simple. Thou shalt not steal, number 18. Don't steal from people. And you steal from people when you promise more than you can deliver. You steal from people when you use unjust weights and balances. That's why we do business in gold and silver coin, because we don't want to cheat you. So I called Lakey the other day and I said, hey, I need some hay. And he said, okay. So we came out to a deal, came up to a price, and I said, okay, I'll take delivery next Tuesday. He said, I'll call you on Monday, let you know if the truck can be down there. So it'd be a truckload of hay on Tuesday. And I said, now, do you want to be paid in gold, silver, or worthless paper? And he says, I'll take the worthless paper. Now, you know, the guy out of his own mouth has said, it's all right, Mr. Gordon, for you to steal from me. I give you permission. But I wouldn't be presumptuous enough to say, well, now listen, will you take paper because I don't want to give you gold? And I offered to pay him in gold coin. He said he didn't want it. So don't steal. And you steal when you use unjust weights and balances. And that's why most of you people are having a problem. You deal in the second and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto. You're dealing in unjust weights and balances using Federal Reserve notes. And then you pay the income tax as a penalty for that. It's all right by me. I don't care. You know, I can do business in Russian rubles or English pounds. Or European euros or Canadian dollars or U.S. dollars or Federal Reserve notes. I can conduct business in any of the above. But some of them are just and some of them are unjust. And so I always like to tell a guy like old Bill Knight, you want to get paid or do you want to get stolen from? Most people want to be stolen from, so that's no problem. Now, in a multitude of counsel, there is safety. So if you'll take a look at advice from other peers. It's an old biblical principle. In a multitude of counsel, there is safety. You know, get somebody else's opinion. Hey, Bob, what do you think of this transaction? Hey, Bob, what do you think of this piece of land? Hey, Bob, what do you think of this cow? And he'll tell you. You know, if I said, hey, Dale, what do you think of that horse? And, hey, Charlie, what do you think of that car? You know, when I want to buy a car, I go over to a mechanic. I go over to Boyd Garrison. I say, Garrison, take a look at the drive this car around a little bit for him. Take this pickup out. Bring it back. Tell me what you think of it. And he'll take it out and drive. He's a mechanic. You know, he comes back. He says, I think it's a lemon. I think it's a piece of trash. Listen to this or listen to that. Or, you know, and so he'll give me a report on it. So I don't just go out and buy a pickup. I take it over to the mechanic. I say, hey, let me pay you to test drive this thing for me. And if I want to buy a horse, I take it over to Dale Smith. I say, Dale, ride this horse. What do you think of this horse? Is that horse a good one or a bad one, or what do you got there? You know, I know a little bit about pickups. I know a little bit about horses. I know a little bit about cows. I know a little bit about this. But when you go ask another guy, you know, he's got an opinion also. You get two or three opinions together. You know, when two or three guys say, hey, did you consider this? Did you consider that? Did you think about this? Did you think about that? And you put that all together, you know, you'll make better deals over the long haul. There's safety in a multitude of counsel. Number 20, and I'm going to take our break here in a second here, but, you know, you've got to be in full control of your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Five motivators of human nature. And if you cannot control your vanity, your jealousy, your lust, your greed, and your fear, you can rest assured that there's a salesman out there that can control you through those five motivators. There's just no doubt about it. Now, if you can control your vanity and somebody offers you this beautiful home in Bellwood Estates, if you can control your jealousy, you know, don't deny yourself. If you can contain your lust and your greed so that they don't blind the eyes of the wise, if you can control your fear so that somebody comes along and says, oh my God, you better buy this insurance policy or this hurricane is going to blow your house down. Hell, the hurricane is going to blow your house down whether you like it or not. And the insurance company isn't going to pay if it does. How do you like that? In fact, if the bill is over $100,000, anytime you have an insurance claim that reaches $100,000 or more, you can rest assured that you're going to go to trial. You're going to go to litigation. The insurance company is not going to pay you $200,000, $300,000, or $500,000. You can take that to the bank. You're going to trial. You're going to get screwed. Now, you know, if you've got an insurance claim and it's $5,500, they'll pay you like a slot machine. The money just comes right out. If they're going to pay $100,000 or more, you're going to sue to get it. So you've got to be in control of your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. If you can do that, then that'll put you on the track to being a businessman in place of a business boy. All right, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log, schedule, and archives that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, the beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business principles. And I use the term businessmen and business boys. And I use it quite often because when I do business with people, I rate them. Is this a businessman I'm doing business with, or is this a business boy? and the world is full of the business boys, there's not as many businessmen. I pointed out that as a group of people, as a race or a group, there's nothing like a Chinese businessman. Now, I've done business with a lot of people, and you ain't done business until you've done business with a Chinaman. Those boys know how to conduct business. And they use these principles. I don't know where they learn them. They didn't learn this from Christianity. They didn't get this from the Bible. I don't think they... But these people, they know how to do business with you and get you to come back. I mean, you keep coming back time after time to that Chinese restaurant. You think about the Chinese restaurant that you go into. Now, my wife and I, we kind of like Chinese food. And we don't eat MSG. And there was a Chinese restaurant that we kind of liked, and we went into, you know, quite often. And my wife would always ask, you know, when we go into a restaurant, do you use MSG in your food? And Chinese restaurants, you know, they typically use a lot of MSG. And so this Chinese guy said, yes, we use MSG. But he said, we have food without MSG. And so my wife said, well, that's fine, but you see, I have medical problems and I can't eat MSG. And that Chinaman wanted our business. Now, he didn't have to say this. He could have lied and said, no, we don't have MSG. My wife can taste that MSG in the food. She can sit down there and eat that, and she can tell you in a heartbeat if it's got MSG in it. I can't, but she can. And so this Chinese fellow, he guided her through the menu, and he said, no, this has no MSG, and this does, and this doesn't, and so on. And so we ate there, and we were happy, and she was happy because she didn't get the MSG, and she didn't get sick like she does if she eats it. And so she was happy with that, and we came back again. After we came back about the second, third time, he asked her, he said, why don't you eat MSG? And she told him the MSG story. He didn't know. And so he was impressed by that. At least he was so impressed, he stopped using MSG in his food in his restaurant. And he told her, he said, because of you, I know you as MSG. No more. No more MSG in anything. And so naturally that pleased us. And naturally, I'm sure that pleased him. And he was doing his customers a bigger and better service by not using it. But here's the moral to the story. He was a businessman, and he wanted our business, and he knew that if he put MSG in his food and she got it, we wouldn't be back. And you know, that Chinese restaurant was always full of people. I'm just telling you, not because of the MSG, but because he was a good businessman. That's why I say the Chinese are dominant in business. I was talking to a guy from Aruba, and he said to me that the businesses, the small businesses on this little Dutch island of Aruba, are all dominated by the Chinese. That's the story in South Africa. It's the story everywhere you go in the world. It's the story in the continent of Africa. You go into the business community, and there's Chinese owned. Chinese. And I've never met a Chinese business boy. Now, there might be some out there, but they're not many. Noel Henry Kaiser came up with a neat saying. In fact, he wrote it on the side of his concrete trucks. And it said, find a need and fill it. And I saw that, not just a kid, in my 20s. It said, find a need and fill it. So on one side of the barrel, it said, find a need. And then as the barrel would roll over, and fill it. Henry Kaiser. You know, in reality, that's what every businessman is attempting to do. He's attempting to find what needs are out there in the community that he can fill. And so most people do not consciously think of that. And so if you want to sell something, you have to sell something that's needed. What is it that is needed in your community? What is it that people want? What is it that they would like to have and don't have or can't get? What service? What goods? Henry Kaiser, you know, concrete's fairly basic construction material. And He was in the construction business. He was in the automobile business. Well, Henry Kaiser, you know, was in the health business. He would see a need, and then he'd go out and fill that need. And so it was a principle of business that he discovered. And he shared it with everybody. He wrote it right on his cement trucks. Find a need and fill it. Now I shared it with you. Number 22, there's no such thing as unemployment. Unemployment does not exist. It's a figment of your imagination. And when you say, I'm unemployed, what you're saying is all of the work has been done. Son, there's no end to work. And that's because everything deteriorates. When you get through building that house over there, son, it is deteriorating from that point on. And in 100 years, that house is going to have to be rebuilt. Houses that were built 100 years ago aren't here anymore. They've been torn down and replaced by something bigger and better. Houses get termites in them. Roofs deteriorate, have to be replaced. Carpet wears out and has to be replaced. When a guy says that he's unemployed, what he is saying is, I won't work for that amount of money or that amount of pay. That's what he's telling you. Now, I live on a farm. There's no shortage of labor. There's no shortage of work here. There's a shortage of labor, not work. And I could put you to work on this farm. Now, I'm not sure that I'm going to pay you what you want to get paid. So when a guy said to me one time that he wouldn't work for less than $25 an hour, he was a refrigeration man, and he was complaining that he was only working about 20 hours a week. So I said, well, if you lower your prices to $20 an hour, it'll make you more competitive than the other people around you. Now, you can work 20 hours a week for $25 an hour and make $500 a week. You could work for $20 an hour times 40 hours a week and make $800 a week. Would you rather work 40 hours for $800 or work 20 hours for $500? That's a choice that you have to make in life. So my business principle is always work for half. So if the going shop rate's $25, you want to charge $12.50. If the going shop rate's $50, you want to charge $25. And people are always attracted at half price. You go out and do business at half price, and you're going to have all the business that you can handle. And otherwise, you're competing with everybody else that's charging $25 or $50 an hour. And you got to share the shortage. And you know, we're going into a recession as I speak. And there will be people that will prosper. You know, in a recession, there are certain businesses that do better than others. And there are people that prosper in recessions. Just get filthy rich. Make money hand over fist when there's a downturn in the economy. Most people can't do that. They don't know how to make money in a recession. I will make more money in the upcoming recession than I have made in the last 30 years. I know how to make money in a recession. And I know what business is valuable in a recession. I know what goods and services are of value. And that's what I concentrate on. In a recession, selling new Cadillacs and Porsches and Rolls Royces, they don't do well. Now, the rich people always have money. The people that are selling Rolls Royces will have no problem selling Rolls Royces to rich people. The rich people that have millions of dollars, they're not affected by recession. Recession doesn't affect somebody that already drives a Porsche. A recession affects people that drive Lexus. The Lexus guy, he's going to be hurt. And the guy that's selling used cars or used furniture or used this or used that or repairs, those businesses are going to do well because, you know, when people can't buy new cars, they buy used cars. When they can't buy used cars, they fix their old car. And when they can't buy new designer jeans, they buy used clothes down here at Salvation Army. So Henry Kaiser, you know, he said, find a need and fill it. And I'm telling you, there's no such thing as unemployment. It's a figment of your imagination. If you're unemployed, son, it's because you've set a standard over here and said, well, I'm not going to sell my labor for anything less than. You go out here and you sell your labor for what somebody else is willing to pay for it. Let me tell you a little story here. You could drop me off anywhere in America, flat ass broke, not a dime in my pocket, at 5 o'clock at night. And in 36 months, I will have $100,000 in gold buried in a hole in the ground at that location. And I'll be free and clear in the process. Now, the reason I say that is because I've done that more than once, and I know what to do and how to do it. My first problem at 5 o'clock at night isn't in buying, selling, and trading. It's in food, clothing, and shelter. First problem I got coming out of the chute, where am I going to sleep tonight? And what am I going to eat tonight and tomorrow morning? So the first thing I'm going to do is walk over to the closest restaurant and say to the man, I am flat broke. I have no money, but I'm not lazy and I'm willing to work. I will wash all of your windows. I will wash your floors. I will wash your dishes or do whatever it is that you have that you want. And I will do it, and I will do it expeditiously. And I will work for food. Will you feed me? If he says no, I'll go to the next restaurant. By the time I pitch that deal to 10 restaurants, I'll get one of them that'll tell me yeah. That's number one. Number two, I need to tell the man, I don't have any place to sleep. I will be happy to sleep in your garage, in your back room, or someplace else. But I won't tell him that until after I've finished my meal. And I will do like my Uncle Lyle. I will work my heart out. I will wash more dishes. I will bus more tables. I will wash more windows and do better work than anybody that's ever walked in his door. And when he sees, when I get through with my labor, how valuable I am, he will give me room and board. Now that's the first olive out of the jar, room and board. Once I have secured room and board, now I have secured my basic needs. And I have one more. It's clothing. I got to have some clothes. Now, I've got what I've got on my back, but I'm going to need a little bit more than that as time progresses along. So I make known to my new employer, would you give a man room, board, and clothes for his labor? I mean, if this guy isn't so damn lazy that hair's growing on the palms of his hands, you know, just look at the palms of his hands. If you see hair, probably you don't want to hire him. If this guy gets out and works, he's going to give you the basic necessities of life. Now, he's going to tell his friends, hey, I got this guy working for me for board and room. And look how hard he works. And then watch what happens. This guy's friends are going to come over and say, hey, listen, I see how hard you're working for old Tony over here. And I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you board and room and $5 an hour or $20 a week or. God, as soon as this guy gives me $20 a week and I practice always save half, then what have I got? $10 a week I'm saving, $500 a year. If I work here for 1 year, I'll have $500 to invest. And that's $20 a week. You know, let's be intelligent people. I got board and room, $500. Once I get my first $500, I can turn that $500 into $1,000 by buying, selling, and trading. I can turn the $1,000 into $2,000. I can turn the $2,000 into $4,000. I can turn the $4 into $8, and the $8 to $16, $32, $64, and $128. Now that's the way that game is played, kids. So there's no such thing as unemployment. Number 23, you know, a man's word is his bond. So don't fail to do that which you have agreed to. When you tell somebody, you know, I can wash your windows, bust your tables, I'll do whatever you want. You know, you get in there and you bust your tail and you do just exactly that. My old Uncle Lyle explained that to me when he hired himself a job at the Union, it was Pacific Lumber Company in Scotia back in 1933. He walked onto the lot, saw 100 people standing up at the office waiting to go in to fill out their applications. He walked right out into the yard, and he said, they sent me out from the office. What do you want me to do? And the boss put him to work. And he was stacking lumber out in the yard all day long, and he did more units of lumber than anybody else. He was, without a doubt, the number one hardest worker that the boss in that section had on his crew. And so my Uncle Lyle worked there for 2 weeks. I think they paid every 2 weeks. Worked there for 2 weeks and went over to the, stood in line to get his paycheck. And of course, there was no paycheck. He'd never been hired by the Union Lumber or the Pacific Lumber Company. Goes back to the boss the following Monday. Said, "Well, I went over to get my check and they didn't have it." And they said they didn't have anything on it. And they asked me to tell you. And so his boss went over there and told him. He said, "This is the best guy I got in my crew. So I don't want to lose him." And so he sent Lyle over there and they filled out the application. Went right to the head of the line. 100 people a day are standing in line filling out their applications for the 6 jobs that are turning over at this lumber company. My Uncle Lyle went in there and hired himself a job. I've told you that story more than once. That's why I say there's no such thing as unemployment. A man's word is his bond. You do that which you've agreed to. Now, a deal in your hand is worth two in your head. And I mentioned that to you last time. I said, you know, I used to be a young fellow. I just got greedy, you know, and I couldn't. Every time I saw a deal come up, I had to go make that deal. Every time a customer called me on the phone, I had to go make that job. And, you know, I was losing money on a lot of jobs and making money on a lot of jobs. And so one day I woke up and I said, is it really profitable to make every deal? And the answer is no. Some deals are losers. And so the trick is that from your experience, you know, when you lose money on a job, you know, you should learn from that. You say, oh, okay, we don't want to do that again. So we have to make a change in our business model when we lose money. Now that I'm an old man, I sit here and I say, well, I'll take that deal, but I won't take that deal. I'll take this deal, I won't take that deal. Now, if somebody came to me and said, Mr. Gordon, why won't you take that deal? You know, if I liked you, I'd sit here and say, well, here's why I'm not going to take that deal. If I take that deal, I can probably make $5,000. And I always tell a story about Donald Trump. I said, if you went to Donald Trump and you said, Mr. Trump, I've got this deal, and you can make $5,000, do you think Donald Trump would take it? I don't. I don't think Donald Trump thinks in thousands. I don't think that Warren Buffett thinks in thousands. I think in thousands. I don't think in millions, and I guess that's why I'm not a millionaire, and I'm not thinking big enough. But I think in thousands. But 5,000 isn't enough to get me thinking. You got to get more thousands than that. And so, if you go to Warren Buffett or Bill Gates or somebody and say, "Well, I got this deal, and you can make $5,000 on it," they'd say, "Well, that's nice, Sonny, but I think I'll pass and let you have that one. And I'm going to wait until there's a bigger, better deal coming because, you know, I've only got so many hours in a day. And when I was in the furniture business, I could sell a load of furniture for $30,000. So I'm selling $30,000 a week off of my truck. Now that's $30,000, $60,000, $90,000, $120,000 a month, isn't it? It's about $1,200,000 a year. And so when somebody said to me, well, Mr. Gordon, there's a customer out here who wants to buy a bed, I'd say, well, send a salesman out to sell him a bed for $300, $400, $500. But I don't want to waste my time talking to a customer for hundreds when I want to be selling thousands. And Donald Trump doesn't want to be talking about thousands when he can be talking about millions. And that's just the way life is. So, a deal in your hand is worth two in your head, and a lot of times people waste their time, effort, and energy dreaming about deals that they really don't have. If you've got a deal now, take it. You know, if I've only got one deal and it's $5,000, I'll take it. But typically, I've already got 5 deals on my plate. And hardly a day goes by, I've got 5 deals cooking. And so I'm a cherry picker, and I'm just going to take the deal that's got the best profit in it. But when I'm down to where I've only got one deal, you know, then that's the deal that we've got in our hand. You know, it's worth, you know, there's an old saying that says, you know, a bird in your hand is worth two in the bush. Unreasonable expectations lead to poverty. People that have unreasonable expectations, I call them dreamers. God, you know, I listen to people's dreams, and they're wonderful dreams, but they don't have any real hope of coming to fruition. They're not even practical. They're not even logical many times. So these unreasonable expectations, like the lottery. The lottery is 84 million to one. Well, you can't win if you don't play. Okay, if you want to play the lottery, get after it. But one of my business principles over here is that business doesn't deal with gambling. I'm not a gambler. A businessman is not a gambler. Businessmen do not gamble. Now, there are gamblers who do business, but businessmen don't gamble. They only bet on sure things. They only invest in, they only engage themselves in business transactions that have profit. And the profit has to be a reasonable profit. There's got to be a reasonable expectation. Now, number 26, if you can't hang on to it, you don't need to make it. And I don't know how many of these old-timey grade B movies you've seen, but you ever notice this old prospector? He's been out here beating his head against the rocks for 30 years. He finally hits the mother load. He comes into town. He's buying drinks for everybody at the bar. And what happens? Old Belle comes over, and she's working in cahoots with the owner of the bar, and they ace him out of his lifetime of work. Which led me to the conclusion, you know, if you can't hang on to the wealth that you create and produce, then you don't need to make it in the first place. If somebody's just going to come along and take it away from you, don't need to waste your time making it. So if you're going to take your time to make it, then you better learn how to hang on to it. And when you've got some wealth or you've got some money, there's just no end to people that have ideas about how you can spend it, how you can invest it, and what you can do with it. I don't know how many times I've had people come to me, well, Mr. Gordon, you know, you could do this and you could do that. It's like buying a gold mine in the bottom of the Pacific Trench. It doesn't make any difference how much gold's down there. There's no way to get it out. It's an unreasonable expectation. And the more money that people have, airline pilots and doctors are the people that invest in the craziest investments. I mean, if you're a con man and you want to make some money, you go approach an airline pilot or a doctor. Those guys will buy anything. They'll buy the craziest, dumbest, most upside-down, unreasonable deal with the poorest expectations that you can imagine. And I guess it's because they got more money than they've got sense. So tuck it away in your heart. If you can't hang on to it, you don't need to make it. And if you can make it, then you need to learn how to hang on to it. And that's in our business school. The business school. Hey, I'm about out of time again. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. And remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.